You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, this is Ed Stetzer here on the New Churches Podcast. So the following episode was actually recorded with Clint Clifton before his passing. And if you're not aware of Clint's life, ministry, and his untimely death, I want to encourage you to listen to the prior episode. We did kind of a memorial episode. But Clint's passion for church planting and developing leaders led him to sharing that wisdom through mentoring, speaking, writing, and podcasting. And we know we actually talked about this, and we were like, well, what would Clint want? And we know he'd want this episode shared with our new church's audience. So again, if you'd like to honor Clint's legacy, the Clint Clifton Global Church Planting Fund has actually been created in his memory to generously fund church planters and remove barriers to pursuing God's call on their lives. To donate to the Clint Clifton Global Church Planting Fund, visit Dumfries. Pillar is like the pillar, pillar in a building, and it's Dumfries, Dumfries.com. That's the church that he planted and planted many churches out of. PillarDumfries.com/Clint. That's PillarDumfries.com/Clint. And of course, you can use the link in the show notes as well. So listen to this episode, knowing that our friend finished his earthly race and really wanted to make much of Jesus through church planting, and encourage you. Thanks for listening.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. This episode's about hiring people in your church plant. And again, it's a continuation of the conversation we had two episodes ago with Todd Adkins and Jamie Caldwell. And Todd, we know him. We love him. He's an old friend. He works over at Lifeway. And prior to Lifeway, he was an executive pastor at McLean Bible Church. So he knows. He knows. He's been at a mega church. He's legitimate. You know, he's got all the key information that people need to know about hiring. These days he's working in leadership development with Lifeway. He's also married and he's got four kids. Jamie's a church planter. The church is called South Shore Church, and it's near Baltimore. It's kind of between, well, it's on the Annapolis side. It's in Annapolis, near Annapolis. And he's also sort of close to Baltimore, and he serves as a city missionary in Baltimore. And so he's leading at his church, the church he planted, but he's also helping, coaching, encouraging a lot of church planters in the Mid-Atlantic. Jamie, thank you so much for being here. Todd, thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Todd, you didn't do your sound.
What?
Yeah, I didn't give you a space. I try to make it so tight that you don't have room to get the what.
Yeah, no, it's okay. If people want to go back in the archives and listen to old episodes, they'll hear plenty of those.
Yeah, we did some focus groups, and a lot of people don't like the what.
That's too bad.
I'm just kidding. I wish we had some focus group. If we had some focus group data on that, that would be great, actually. So if you don't like Todd doing the what, just go ahead and send us an email so we have a record of that. And maybe we
I do remember Todd. People sending in stuff about Ed interrupting Daniel. He would always interrupt Daniel during.
Oh, that's funny.
During the intro, and thought it was so funny.
That's funny. I've never known Ed to interrupt anybody.
Never.
All right. So today we're talking about hiring. Again, I just got to say it. We said it in the previous episode, but hiring feels like one of those things that a church plant is not thinking about. And so I want to challenge that idea just a little bit. And so we're going to talk about hiring. So let's start off by talking about the fact that most church planters think they'll have multiple full-time staff members. So I kind of go before the church plant, you know, before it starts, when we're still starry-eyed and optimistic, and we haven't been punched in the nose yet by the difficulties of church planting, and we think we're going to be able to hire full-time staff members. Often, we think we could hire them even before the church begins, and things are more difficult and we find as we get off into ministry that money doesn't come along so easily, and that finding the right people to fill in those roles isn't quite so easy. So we think we're going to have a lot of staff in the beginning, but then in actuality, we end up doing most things ourselves. And so, Jamie, tell me, how long should a new church planner expect to work as the solo staff member at a new church?
3 to 5 years.
All right.
But you should plan on like 6. That way you're not disappointed that it doesn't happen. Because the people that you can afford early, you don't want very long.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're just saying to set your expectations so low that you're never disappointed.
Absolutely. 100%. That just, as in church planting generally, if you can lower your expectations, it's going to help tremendously, because your people are going to have to do that. Like, they're expecting something, and then what they're going to get every week is not what they expected. So you're modeling for them how to just be content with what the Lord has given you, less or more.
Wow. We always tell church planners we work with to act their age. You know, church planners go out and they want everything that every church has. They want to offer it and provide it, and they think that maybe their church isn't growing because they don't have all those bells and whistles. And so they're often trying to do too much too fast instead of doing a few things and doing them really well. So, Todd, what do you think about you've worked with a lot of church planners about the amount of time? Is Jamie sound like he's roughly right on the amount of time?
I mean, it depends. I'm notoriously, I take forever to hire positions. So I'm one of those hire slow, fire fast guys.
Yeah.
And you know, I've served in all different types and sizes of churches for sure. Not ever a church plant, but certainly smaller churches and multi-site churches and all of the above. And the interesting thing is, if you're doing a good job of leadership development, you probably won't have a hard time filling that spot. And the beautiful thing is, again, if to reference something from the previous episode that I was on, where I said it's a lot easier when you build leaders than buy them, is they're going to have staying power. They already live in that area, all of the above. So it's easier for you to see them for who they really are than to just interview really, really well. It takes a lot to get through the interview process. Some people are great at interviewing. So really getting down into the weeds and understanding who this person is and who they are before they get there and, you know, spend 3 months with you is difficult. So it's much better, I think, to try to bring somebody up and hire them from within.
Right. Yeah. So when I hear you say that, I think, man, I don't know if it's easier, but it definitely takes longer. You know, there's obviously you could go out and hire somebody if you had the resources to do it, but at the same time, you know, it's more stable. It feels more secure. You know, when I bring somebody on that I know deeply, I feel like I can envision this person doing a really good job, and it always feels vulnerable, especially if you've hired some folks and it hasn't gone great. It always feels vulnerable to bring somebody in that you haven't really seen them in context with your people yet. So
if you're bringing somebody from the outside, you better be crystal clear. I mean, clear on your vision, values, your systems and structures. You know, it all has to be in play. Otherwise they get to do their own math and write their own stuff. They're going to make decisions that are outside of what you would want. And sometimes it's not their fault because we haven't been clear. But if you're really clear, then you don't need a bunch of policies or you don't need checks and balances, because you've hired somebody with integrity and you're really clear on who we are and what we're doing and what we're about. And then they can run. But
yeah,
you got to be clear.
In my mind, there are two sides to hiring. There's the actual work that you need to be accomplished by somebody, oversight that needs to be provided in the ministry. But then there's this whole other side that is HR, legal compliance, payroll. These components for most new churches are simply just not prepared for. Most church planters just don't know how to do this stuff. So Todd, how would you advise a new church led by a church planter with little to no experience in these areas to proceed ahead?
Again, it would be going back to the previous episode where we talked about a number two role or an executive pastor role. Typically in the past, that has been an administrator. And, you know, I'm a son of a pastor and a nephew of pastors and cousins of pastors. Like, there was a bunch of boys in the hills and hollers of Kentucky with a last name Atkins, and most of them ended up in ministry, most bivocational. So my experience growing up was with my dad having deacons. And it just so happened that his chairman of the deacons was good at this stuff. And so there's some of those things that, you know, we've kind of forgotten about or dismiss, and we want to be like the big church and have this position. When I'm like, actually, you don't really need that position. God has given you exactly what you need. You just have to tap into that person. Your job is to make sure the person of integrity, that they're spiritually mature. But our big reminder is, hey, we were dramatically affected by the church growth movement, and most of our churches just treat baptism like it's the finish line, not the starting line. The problem is people cannot grow into spiritual maturity apart from using their gifts in service to Christ. We know, yeah, Ephesians 2:10, everybody's his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which he's prepared in advance for them to do. Here's the thing. There's tons of people in your church that can do some of these different things. And instead of calling them up into maturity, we get them to a certain point and we hire them. We almost make it almost feels to them like they're called into ministry. And I'm like, no, you're just maturing as a Christian. Like, you're not necessarily called to ministry. You're supposed to have an impact in our church. You're supposed to have an impact in our community. But just because you're tired of sitting in a pew and you're growing doesn't mean that, you know, you're ready to come on staff. Like, let me just unleash you with who you are. It may be 15 hours, you know, it may be 10.
Yeah.
But they're often going to get way more fulfillment out of that than they do in their day job. And so they're in, and they're going to be great.
Yeah.
I love every bit of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted you to go ballistic. I really wanted to hear more about it. Like, I almost gave you a standing ovation, man. Like, our church makes great use of the stipend. You're a volunteer and you're really great at your job and you're really great at your ministry. Don't quit your job. Just keep doing it and do your ministry and let us reward you. Let us give you a little something to say thanks.
We need excellence. You don't understand. We need excellence. So we've got to pay that person. We've got to make this a part-time role for 15 hours a week. This preschool 9:30 hour person, that has to be a part-time role. We need
excellence. The longer we lean into being experts and still get mad at our people for being consumers, like, we're just creating the problem. Ooh. It's just ridiculous. Right? We're like, wow, how dare you get all these products? And then we're creating people to create products. And it is so frustrating. Just do the work that's in front of you. Yeah. And you said earlier, it just so happened. Like, that's the book of Esther, right? Like, God just so happened to do this. And he just so happened to do this.
Yeah.
He'll give you the church he wants you to have with the people he knows you need. Right. It's your job to know them well enough to put them into place.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are touching on so much here. It's obvious that accomplishing ministry tasks with volunteers is much better from a financial standpoint. What are some indications, though, that a church has grown? Each of you have actually hired people and paid them a salary, although we're advocating for volunteer and stipended work. So tell me what the triggers are that would make you say, okay, this is the capacity of this task is so great that it substantiates to have a full-time ministry role.
I think people start to see the need clearly. Like, there's a conversation about, man, we should really do something over here or something over here. And that conversation is almost always tied to somebody doing the work, right? Like, I mean, if we could have more of that, that would be amazing. That would be helpful. So for us, it is just capacity. And it's the health of the volunteer. So if we know them well, and we start to see that they're getting tired, they're getting exhausted, they're getting burnt out, that's a red flag where we say, man, we got to bring somebody on board. or if they're killing it, but the ministry is just getting beyond the bounds of what they're able to do, then it's time to maybe hire them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of, actually, when we have somebody in sort of a volunteer capacity and they're thriving, and then it becomes, really not possible to manage it at the level, but they're pouring themselves out and serving so well. I can think of one situation in the church that I lead where we had that scenario, and the ministry was thriving, and it was far beyond the capacity that a volunteer should be able to do. And when the volunteer finally said to us, "Hey, can you help here?" They didn't say, "Can you hire me?" They said, "Can you?" And I remember in this scenario, it was like, "Can you help me out with a babysitter? Like, could you hire a babysitter so that I can volunteer more?" And I just like that heart that says, like, "Will you help me out with my other responsibilities in life?" I think that sort of thing. There's what I'm saying is there's an incremental move toward a ministry role at high capacity that often a volunteer that's thriving in the role can be, we can move it along that pathway.
Incrementalism goes both ways. And here's what I would say about this. The interesting thing about church, especially today, if you look at the 1980s, some like 1980, early 80s, we had a recession. But from then to like 2008, we were extremely affluent, and you had the church growth movement. And you had things like membership. There was a membership study that I can't remember. I wish Ed was here because he would. But it was basically, hey, members give more, pray more, are more spiritually mature, all the things. So you had several things coming together at one time where then everybody wanted, membership was a really big deal. So they just lowered the bar to membership. Can you walk the aisle and fog this mirror? Congratulations, you're a member. That didn't make people serve more, pray more, give more, by the way.
Yeah.
You had affluence, so we were able to, there was a resurgence, there was some growth there, but, you had a generation that was tithers, all the things were aligned there, where I think we got lazy and we just started hiring people. And what I'm talking about incrementalism in this way is if you, churches will not, they will drift toward complexity, not toward simplicity. You don't drift toward simplicity. The same thing in any job or role. If you give someone a job, they will ultimately necessitate their existence. And because of purpose-driven model, they can go, this is discipleship, or this is evangelism, or this is fill in the blank. Everybody's got a great argument for why their ministry should exist.
Right.
I would say you need to be really tight as you're growing. As a church plant, you need to be really tight on what you do and what you don't do, because it's really hard to kill stuff off later on. So again, that's why I would say hire that position really slow. I would echo what Jamie said and what you've said as far as be sure the need is there, because once you hire the position, they will necessitate their own existence.
Wow.
And so say, hey, is this the purpose of the church? Is this one of the key purposes of the church? Mm-hmm. And then look at people's engagement in that ministry. Yeah. Because sometimes there's a lot of engagement in a ministry, but it isn't in alignment with where the church is going, where the church should go from a purpose standpoint, or the vision. And so we end up hiring something that is out of alignment,
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you want quadrants on this stuff and ways to figure out where you are, if you look at 9ESL stuff that I've thrown up on YouTube, you'll find plenty of hireability stuff and when to hire externally and all those things, but done in a way that is better than me spitting sentence fragments on on a podcast, because I'm a visual person.
Right.
So I need to put something in a quadrant to go, oh, I'm in this box and I need to move to that box.
Yeah. That's helpful, Todd. So let me share an idea that I heard a long time ago and has always been in the back of my mind, kind of spinning like the beach ball. So I think I looked for this yesterday to try to attribute it to the right person. I think I heard this from Andy Stanley, but I couldn't find anywhere on the internet where it was referenced to that he actually was the one who said this. But the conversation was roughly about the reality that when you hire somebody in church life, you're hiring somebody as either a positive, a negative, or a neutral in terms of the effect it has on the congregation, in terms like the congregation getting larger numerically or the congregation having more contributions given to it. And so he used the example of like a youth pastor generally being a plus, you know, a positive. The new families are going to come to the church because there's a youth ministry there that's doing good things for their kids. That often will equate to more giving. And so he would see us a hire like a youth pastor as a positive, where like an executive pastor might be a bit more of a neutral. It's sort of working on the infrastructure of the church, but it doesn't have a direct effect on ministry to people that would cause more people to come right away. And something like a facilities manager or maybe a missions pastor would actually be a negative because they're going to spend money and they're not going to bring anything in. Their ministry is not going to result in new people coming in to, and in fact, in a missions pastor, you're going to pay his salary. He's not going to bring anybody in, and he's actually going to send people away. And he's going to cost, you know, the church money to raise for doing that. Now, that could sound really harsh and kind of
it does.
It does.
And
yeah,
I'm very. And I am an eight classic executive pastor dude, and I'm like, oh
yes. So I'm not advocating for that. That I'm just telling you what I heard a long time ago that has been in my mind. The argument that Stanley, if it was Stanley, was making was not that you should never hire a missions pastor or you should never hire a facilities manager. The argument was that you don't want to hire a whole bunch of facilities manager type things, a whole bunch of negatives right in a line. You want to make sure that you're diversifying the pluses, minuses, and neutrals as you're building the ministry. So I guess what I'm saying to you is, how does that strike you? And is that just a rubbish idea that we should eradicate from our minds after hearing it? Or is there something to it?
I'd eradicate it. Definitely.
I spend a little too much time in DC, so I would just change it. I would say whether it's internally focused or externally focused, because I get his point.
Yeah.
Like one thing is externally focused in growing the church from outside. One is more internally focused in taking care of the people that are there. So I could get on board if it was couched in that manner to say, okay, hey, a church gets unhealthy if they're focused too much, you know, internal. So like making sure the chairs are set up on Saturday morning for this group versus no, we're spending money outside the church. I can get there. I don't know about the missions thing. I think the missions thing is what really threw me off.
Same. My son is 13 and we have an ongoing conversation right now that's bled over into every other area of my life and ministry. And it's the difference between trying to give a correct answer and a true answer.
Mm.
And there is a lot of correctness to that whole idea, right? Yeah. I do like it better, like modifying it internal, external makes it sound like you don't hate missions. And that's a plus. That's a good thing. But at the end of the day, I really think that we've got to make sure that our policies don't drive our pastoring, but our pastoring drives our policies.
Boom.
Oh. So that we're not hiring people to get more people. We're not hiring people to get to the next step or to break the barrier or to go over a hurdle or whatever it might be. We're hiring people because they're the people that God wants us to hire when he wants us to hire them.
Is he being too spiritual, Todd?
A little bit. Because I would say
that's why we hired an executive pastor, by the way.
Yeah.
Like those are my decisions. We had to hire a guy to make the right decision.
Oh man. Because if you do it right, those things allow you to scale outreach. Those things allow you to scale getting more people to know Jesus. If it's just about creating an audience, you're toast anyway. It's got to be an army. It's got to be Henrietta Mears. I think it was Henrietta Mears had a quote. People are not vessels to be filled. They're torches to be lit. And she was like the Sunday original Sunday school lady in Southern California, and you saw Billy Graham and Bill Bright and, you know, all these people come through and out of that ministry. And it's just like, whoa. Navigators as well. I can't think of his name right now. Like, all these guys came through her. So, fascinating lady. And I do think that's true. Like, what I'm trying to do, the Bible talks about, you know, church leaders in two roles. There's a shepherd and the steward. I just happen to enjoy the steward hat way more. It's poetry and plumbing. I enjoy the plumbing part way more, whereas I think most pastors enjoy the poetry part way more. But eventually, your great idea and great vision boils down to work. And if you want your dreams to become reality, it's going to take the plumbing to make it happen. And so,
spoken like a true executive pastor.
There you go.
Jamie, you want to push back?
No, I mean, he's not wrong, right? And I'm the newbie on the podcast. So at the end of the day, what I'll say is we hired an executive pastor because I'm like, God will take care of it. And that's a great sort of shepherding mentality. But also, when we hired, I remember a meeting we had at a dining room table where one of our elders said, because the question was, are we going to find property or hire staff? Like, we've got extra money, and these are the two major needs. We're meeting in the ugliest middle school that's ever existed. It's like 103 degrees on Sunday mornings. It's just the worst. And we have a guy that says, I've been praying for years that God would give us a building. I'm convinced that he's going to, and we should hire staff. And that sounded like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But I wanted to hire staff, so we leaned into it. And literally 4 months later, we had a building that was paid for that somebody gave us.
Wow.
So we cannot neglect God's got a sovereign strategy. So instead of creating it, we got to find it and we got to lean into it. And to Todd's point, we've got to do the plumbing work to make sure we don't break it.
Yeah.
But we can't jump to step two and start writing policies about how we're going to hire and when we're going to hire until we have a picture of what God is doing and we're willing to just scrap the rest of it.
Man, Todd, I'm glad we invited a real pastor.
I hate policies, by the way. Policies just means that you're unclear and lazy. And anytime anybody does something dumb, you write a policy rather than address it.
Bro, that's why our first policy I ever wrote, we were at Panera at 6 a.m. and I wrote a policy and I texted it to them that said, pastor people, policies don't. Because I came from a church where I was an executive pastor. I didn't lead with that. I probably should have. And my job was to get people off the praise team without telling them why they were off the praise team by writing a policy that would make sure they couldn't be on the praise team. I did that more often than not, and it was problematic.
Wow. Wow. Well, guys, you are full of help and wisdom. Thank you so much for spending time talking to us about this today. I appreciate you both.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.